It's 1742. A Russian aristocrat and military engineer, fluent in Turkish and French, rises to prominence in the imperial court of Peter the Great. He has all the trappings of nobility, including a country house tended by 300 serfs. He's held in such high regard that the Tsar adopts him. He travels with his father's grand embassy in Europe. He meets philosopher Voltaire, who calls him a star of the Enlightenment. This great figure of Russian history's name is Ganibal. Charming, intelligent, and a man of extraordinary achievement. Oh, and also a black African. Welcome to Blind History with Gareth Cliff and Anthony Meaderer, and we are here to give you a look into the interesting people from history. We try to choose a variety of people from all kinds of places, and this guy you discovered, Ant, you found a little article about him, and I mean, now I went down the rabbit hole, and this is what I love about doing this show is I learn new things, even though I'm a history fan and I think I've read a lot of history books. You never know everything.
No, you don't.
This story is extraordinary. Imagine a black man from Cameroon, they reckon, ending up not only in the Russian nobility, but as the adopted son of the Tsar, commanding armies, and ultimately having a grandson who became the father of Russian literature. I mean, you'd think it was made up.
Yeah, it was insane. The black moor of Peter the Great. It was
unbelievable.
It was just the story. When I read it the first time, it's just incredible. Eh? Rags to riches, although he did come from nobility in Africa.
Well, yes, but he was basically kidnapped by the slave trade.
Yeah.
And being the son of a sort of wealthy and well-known either aristocrat or king in Cameroon, he was taken on ships by the Barbary pirates, who were, you know, famous slavers of that period in the 1700s. And the biggest buyers of slaves at that time were the Muslim world, and especially the Ottomans, because they couldn't enslave Muslims. It was prohibited in their religion, but they could enslave pagans. And obviously, you know, all the people of Central Africa were pagans.
They were, and his tribe was pagan.
Yeah.
So his name was Abram.
Abram, yeah.
Yeah, at the time. And then, you know, when he finally passed away, it was Abram Petrovich Ganibal. And I think as we go through his story, I mean, the Petrovich and the Ganibal are so relevant. Petrovich, son of Peter.
Yes.
Which is Peter the Great. And then Ganibal, because Russians pronounce Hannibal as Ganibal. And the way he operated from a military perspective, they just likened him as the great Hannibal. And we've covered Hannibal in one of our other podcasts.
I think he was taken out of Africa at the age of 8 as a slave. And because he was a slave of noble origin, he was a particularly prized possession. And he was sent to the court of the Ottoman emperor. I think it was Mustafa, the then Ottoman Sultan. I've just come from Istanbul and I saw the Topkapi Palace where Ganibal must have spent some time in his youth. And he obviously started off, you know, cleaning things and tidying up. But he became very good friends with the Sultan's younger brother, who eventually became the Sultan, Ahmed. And with that closeness to power, he found himself often enveloped in all those crazy politics of the Ottoman court, which were, I mean, it was a really dog-eat-dog world, and people were always vying for prominence. Mm. And he managed to learn Turkish during that time.
He was prolific with languages.
He was clearly a very intelligent guy.
Yes, 100%.
And from an early age, his intelligence seems to have been obvious to people. So they gave him a good education. He spent an enormous amount of time learning mathematics, geometry, military engineering became his forte later on. And an amazing career ensued from that. But what's, I think, particularly interesting is this Russian connection, because while he was in Turkey, in the Ottoman Empire, in Istanbul, he was noticed by a Russian diplomat. And this Russian diplomat said, listen, when things start to go wrong here, as they always did at the Ottoman court, I'm going to get the Tsar, I'm going to get his permission, and I'll take you and a few of the other African slaves who we think are really you know, not only brilliant, but also quite exotic and strange in a country like Russia. And we'll take you away. We'll spirit you away to freedom. You can come to Moscow. And they did. They released them into freedom. They weren't slaves anymore there, but they were curiosities. The Russians have always kind of thought of, because it's so far away, Africans as being, you know, very different people. There was obviously a lot of prejudice. Yeah. They were the villains in all the stories.
And they always thought they were almost like the bogeyman.
Yeah.
Just amazing, because of all the big names in Russia are linked to Gannibal. We all know Leo Tolstoy. Mm-hmm. So his great-grandfather,
Pyotr,
he was the one that actually facilitated all of this and took Abram Gannibal up to Peter the Great's court.
Right.
And you know, Peter the Great as well, for all his craziness, he was progressive. And, you know, he was definitely trying to bring Russia into more European ways. And his feeling was, look, if this man is of a different color, different culture, we can prove he can fit in perfectly in anywhere in the world, then people will start realizing that openness is the answer.
And merit. I mean, yes. Like he was very against the idea of what was then the Russian aristocracy's way of doing things, that you just inherited titles and jobs and names and, you know, all of that was just in the blood. And what he was trying to say here very clearly is, here, I'm going to bring this kid in from far away. He's completely foreign. He doesn't look like any of us. And I'm going to prove to you that him on his merits can get ahead, that I can make sure that if I give him the opportunities that all of you have, he will excel just as much. And he proved exactly that.
Yeah.
I mean, so Peter took a big liking to him, brought him into the household. He was baptized in 1706. Peter was his godfather. And it was personally significant to him because he used that date as his birthday from then on. So he decided that was going to be his birthday. He didn't know the actual date of his birth from his origins in Africa.
But Peter the Great, just a side story, I mean, he loved the dwarfs. and his daughter got married to this lavish wedding, and his son-in-law died of alcohol poisoning on the way back home after the wedding.
Talk about a bachelor's party.
Yeah, so just we talk on the other side of Peter the Great. And then he had a replica of his daughter's wedding with dwarfs a week later. So there was some crazy stuff. So he was enlightened, but also a bit of a nutter sometimes.
He received such an extensive education. And even while Peter was on his grand embassy across Europe, he dropped him off in France and left him in Paris for a while, where he met Voltaire. Mm. And Voltaire called him the dark star of Russia's enlightenment.
Yes.
I mean, really incredible how this guy's life intersected so unexpectedly with everyone else. And yet, I'm afraid if you ask most people who Gannibal was, they would have no idea.
Exactly.
His contribution to military engineering, the canals that he dug, the forts he built, particularly in modern Estonia, where, you know, there are still projects that he supervised and came up with and facilitated that are still in operation today.
Yeah, that's incredible. But the French connection was testimony to his character and his personality. He joined the army. I mean, crazy in France. He just loved military, loved battles. And he was appointed a captain, and it was the siege of Saint Antonio, something to that effect. That was very a successful campaign at the time.
In the Pyrenees.
But then he was blown up to a certain extent. He got injured.
We get injured quite badly.
Yeah, quite.
They decided to put him in the infirmary.
Yeah, exactly. And then he came back to Paris as a war hero. And that was his time. And he'd learned a lot. And then when he went back to Russia, he had this massive welcome. So everybody loved him.
He remained close to the Tsar right up to his death. But then, unfortunately for him, his life took a bit of a turn for the worse because there were some guys at court who did not like him. Most especially Menshikov, who was, you know, a typical conservative, didn't like anything foreign, thought that he was suspicious, didn't trust him because he had a black skin. Mm. All of that prejudice came to the fore, and he exiled him to Siberia.
Yeah,
this was a very dark time for him. But he was on the border of, if you can imagine a map of Asia. I mean, this guy's come from Cameroon in the 1700s. Mm. He's gone all the way to Istanbul, then to Moscow, then to all of Western Europe. Now he finds himself on the borders of the known world.
He never got downhearted. Look, I mean, we don't know, but that was 300 years ago or whatever. But
He didn't sit there and sink into depression and do nothing.
100%. And ironically, Menshikov ended up being banished to Siberia as well. So, yeah,
bit of poetic justice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Right. So, but he did have a lot of that. He had great support with Peter the Great. And then when Peter the Great passed away, there was the distrust, and he was an outsider. And then later on, when Elizabeth passed away, the way they treated him. And
the Russian aristocracy were kind of
yeah, that's exactly. Yeah.
But Elizabeth was also very fond of him because they'd kind of grown up together.
Yeah, Peter's daughter, correct.
That's right. And she made him a major general. She brought him back to court, so he wasn't banished to Siberia anymore. He took on a number of wives during this time, not all at the same time, but he had, I think, 10 kids.
Yes.
And was given this beautiful manor, which he retained, with 300 serfs. Mm. Serfs were slaves.
That's a full circle. He was a slave.
Right, from slave to slave owner.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing. And, you know, he had a coat of arms, a rank in nobility. He was actually regarded very highly, ultimately, towards the end of his life. But he could tell, like, by the time Catherine the Great came along, that he was a bit of a leftover from a bygone era. Mm. He could tell that Peter was long gone. People had forgotten about the amazing things that he'd done in his early career in Russia. And he sort of took the hint that he should go and live quietly and enjoy the rest of his life. And he did. Yeah. Quite some time on this, you know, big farm that he'd been given with all his slaves and his kids. And one of his grandchildren ended up being Pushkin.
Correct. Count Pushkin.
Count Pushkin, the famous Russian author that he's called the father of Russian literature. Yeah. And it is, again, a full circle thing. You know, the Tolstoy who discovered him at the court of the Sultan, right through to Pushkin, his own grandson, who was this brilliant writer.
There's a little gap in between where it was the Seven-Year War. They brought him back because he was the go-to man. They brought him back to fix up the Russian military, which he did very, very well. And
he modernized it in some ways too, didn't he?
Yes, he did. And then he started, he loved fireworks, so he could put on the most incredible fireworks displays. And in this instance, he started working on making almost like rockets as we know them today from fireworks. In other words, using them in battle rather than just for a display for everybody's pleasure. And he worked on that. And then that got negative again on him. And then he went back to his big estate.
It's amazing he was also known for these fireworks. I think when he took over as governor of Tallinn, which is in modern Estonia, he put on this big fireworks display. And just by doing that, the whole town, which thought he was suspicious and odd.
He swung them. 100% swung.
Listen, fireworks can do a lot.
Yeah. But I mean, if you think about it, so he's everybody wants to have his plaque or his name somewhere. I mean, in Estonia, in Tallinn, he's got a memorial of sorts there. I mean, there is as well in Russia. There was some confusion of where he was born, you know, Ethiopia or Cameroon. And in Ethiopia, they still got a street named after his great-grandson, Pushkin. But generally, everybody wanted to be part of the story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's amazing that there are still Russians running around. And, we speak about black Russians in history, but we're not actually talking about the color of their skin. And here was this guy in one of the parts of the world that was not known for its tolerance or its progressive thought. And this man managed to rise to the very top of Russian society, make an enormous difference to their military, prove that, you know, brilliance in a military and an academic sense can be attained by anyone from any background in any place. And really for a lot of people who were at that point still quite prejudiced, he was an example of why it was stupid to be like that.
Yeah.
And thanks to Peter the Great and to his tremendous abilities, I think it changed the opinion of so many people in Europe at an early stage. This is long before the abolition of slavery or, you know, Wilberforce coming along or any of that stuff. So an incredible, you know, kind of persuasive force in Europe at that time.
Agreed. And if you just look at, you mentioned a little bit earlier that he had 10 children. They all ended up in the aristocracy, as you mentioned.
His eldest son was called Ivan. If that isn't Russian,
exactly. You know? His descendants went into military, so they still had that background from their father or their grandfather. And Ivan, as you mentioned, became an accomplished officer. I think it was in the Ukraine. He became the second highest position you can attain in Russia in the Navy. And then crazy stuff like many of the British aristocracy are descended from Gannibal. You know, the Duchess of Westminster, Alexander, the Duchess of Abercorn, George Mountbatten.
Right. So that's Prince Philip's family.
And what you said a little bit earlier, you know, a lot of us, I have to say, myself included, didn't know Gannibal.
Mm.
And if you just read his story, it's insane. Amazing.
Well, I certainly hope that, you know, that we all have learned something interesting about this guy. I'm really pleased you found his name and decided that we should focus on him, because again, these are those golden nuggets that you find every now and then in history, because yeah. The obvious big names, everybody knows a little bit about them. Mm. But with someone like this, I had to read a lot in order to inform myself on just the slightest thing, because I knew nothing. But it is amazing, again, how these historical lives all intersect.
Yeah, exactly.
And in his case, to have been alive and to have borne witness to all of the things that were happening in Europe at that time, and frankly, in the Ottoman Empire, and even in Africa, what he could remember. There is still some debate about where exactly in Africa he comes from, because he had the idea that he was born of an Ethiopian noble family or royal family. They've done some research. Modern historians have done some research, all kinds of comparisons. They figured out that he was probably born near Lake Chad in Cameroon, Cameroon, and that's the most likely possible place where he could have come from. So that's not Ethiopia, which was kind of involved in Europe.
And also the Negroid look versus the Northern African look, so like a Hannibal for that matter.
Right.
There's almost Egyptian, European influence in it. And a lot of, I mean, you know, there's so much prejudice in those days.
Sure.
So to tell a story, they would want to make it more Ethiopia.
Because to sanitize it a little bit.
Exactly, to sanitize.
But he was a black man.
100%.
And his son, Ivan, looked like a black man. So it was really, for that time and place, properly odd and extraordinary and exotic and weird for the Europeans. But this guy just never let that get him down. Mm. And none of it, even, you know, being exiled to Siberia, nothing got him down. He was there to win.
It was a powerful, powerful, powerful character. And what I'm also learning more and more is although we often talk about a global village, and we saw in the pandemic now, everybody's, you know, banding together globally, but the cultures are so different in Russia to China to Western Europe to even the UK is different to parts of Western Europe. The French are different to the Germans.
Well, we think of these nations and people and cultures as being unidimensional, like they're very black or white, no shades of gray. But his story to me just illustrates how at a time where we think history was very binary, there was obviously a lot of stuff going on that wasn't as clear. I mean, you know, slavery, which we'll talk about in the next episode too, because there was a guy who was very pro-slavery in the next episode. Slavery was just a way of life. It wasn't a moral thing for people at that point. Mm. And, you know, it's easy to look at history and go villains and victors. Mm. But when you observe these things at close quarters, it's not that
it's
simple.
Not exactly.
And this family clearly, you know, illustrate that very well. By the way, his great-grandson, Alexander Pushkin, wrote the book, which was The Moor of Peter the Great. But it was a little bit more than memoirs. Mm. It was a little bit of an honorific more than anything else. It was meant to make his great-grandfather look good. And he worshipped the ground his great-grandfather walked on. So they've done a stage version of his book. And there are many other diaries that have been published recently about, you know, the life of Gannibal. I mean, an amazing, amazing story.
Johan, I think it's quite nice. That's always what we set out to achieve, is for people now to go dig a bit deeper and to learn a little bit more about these people that we talk about. And this is just one of these that a lot of us don't know about, and it's been fantastic to learn more about him.
So go and look him up. Gannibal. Fantastic.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Blind History. Every episode is available on the Cliff Central app, cliffcentral.com, or wherever you get your podcasts. In the next episode...
His career was shaped, there was a little bit of luck at least, because his uncle was Captain Maurice Suckling, and he took him under his wing. And he spent his teenage years, first of all, technically learning in the Thames, and then also just going out to sea. So he spent his life on the sea.